Dory Monson Show on an historic afternoon here in America. Last hour, you heard Maine Senator Susan Collins announce why she is voting yes for the nominee, Brett Kavanaugh, for the Supreme Court. And it was a devastating takedown of the witch hunt against Brett Kavanaugh, this man deserves an apology from the Democrats. I'm not going to hold my breath on that one. But this is a guy who was in front of his wife and his teenage daughters accused to be a sex offender. And it is absolutely outrageous what they did to this guy. The FBI summary report is absolutely conclusive that there is zero corroborating evidence. That doesn't mean that Dr. Ford was a liar. It means that they don't think it was Brett Kavanaugh who did whatever she says happened to her. So let's get to your phone calls. Lines are jammed, as you might expect. Grab a line when one opens up at 888-973-CHIRO. We don't do this a lot, but when it's a story this momentous, I think you, your voice, your opinion is a huge part of what we should be talking about here. To your phone calls we go. Ryan is in Redmond. Hey, Ryan, you're on CHIRO Radio.
Hey, Dory, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
So I missed what the senator said, but I'm assuming you said she's voting for Kavanaugh, which I think is the right choice. So let me just kind of put in my two cents here on this whole thing, if I could.
Yeah, real quick.
This could turn out two ways. Either Kavanaugh's confirmed or not confirmed, which is scary for both reasons. If he gets confirmed, then that kind of sets back the whole Me Too movement with, all allegations are false.
I don't think it does at all.
If he's not confirmed, right? What was that?
I don't think it sets back Me Too at all. In fact, I think if they took a stand against somebody on totally uncorroborated evidence, I think that would have hurt Me Too. Because if we're going to start stringing men up, based on one person's uncorroborated, or in this case, three people, but at least one of them has been totally torn apart, her sworn statement.
No, I totally agree. And that's what I was going to say next, is if he's not confirmed, then that sets back the Me Too movement, because now it's going to be a political weapon, and it's not going to be taken seriously.
Yeah.
Either way, this is the most horrible thing that I've ever seen in my life as an American.
Well, I cannot remember the politics of destruction being used like this ever before, where they told this man, this husband, this father, and tried to tell America that he was a sex offender. It's absolutely nauseating to me. Ryan, thank you. Francis is in Linwood. Hey, Francis, you're on CHIRO.
Hi, Dory.
Hey, Francis.
After I listened to all of the testimony, I listened to the entire thing, what struck me about Kavanaugh was not really whether he did that or not, but his response to it. And as I was watching, I thought, he is not giving a straight answer to any of this. He is, why couldn't he just say, yeah, I did party and I was drunk. That was when I was 17. I'm not
that
way
that.
Now.
He did say that.
And then he'd answer a question saying, yeah, but I was first in my class. Well, really?
Okay, then wait. Hold on one sec. First of all, he did say, I partied a lot. He said, I liked beer. I still like beer. He admitted all of that. So I don't know what you mean when you say that. Why couldn't he just say that? He did say that.
Well, I know, but he did not. He denied the extent of what his, the things that were written in his yearbook. He tried to make that sound like, oh, just boys will be boys. But it sounded like, there was a lot of hard partying going on, not just the beer here and there.
But that's not what he was being investigated for, Francis. He was being investigated for sexual assault.
I understand that.
And not every high school or college boy who drinks is a sexual assaulter. And that's what he was taking a stand against.
Right. No, I understand that. But in my opinion, that had something to do with it, because if he was drinking as much as what they said, he could have done that and not remembered, according to what I've read about blackouts.
Okay, well, and that's where you need some corroborating evidence if you're going to try to destroy a man's life and destroy his his career. Yeah, I mean, she said there were three people there who witnessed it, and the FBI, I've got the FBI summary report right in front of me. They interviewed all three of those people, and they could not corroborate her story, which makes that a very flimsy story. If she said we were one-on-one in a room, that'd be one thing. Then she said, she said. But she said, no, there are three people who witnessed it, and those three people said, no, we didn't. And one of them said, I didn't even know the guy. Francis, I appreciate your call, though. Thank you very much. Mike is in Tacoma. Hey, Mike, you're on Cairo.
Hi, Dory. I just want to say I'm glad that he was cleared, and I've been for him the whole time. I didn't believe the story from the beginning. I don't believe it now. I think it's flimsy, and I've had people tell me at my workplace, well, you don't know what it's like to be a rape victim. Well, I do. I do know what it's like. And I just think the flimsy story, the flimsy allegations that these people are coming forth is a sham. It's a shame that they're trying to ruin this good man's name.
It was nauseating to watch this process unfold. And as I said, after Susan Collins, who she did an amazing job of taking apart every single opposition point to Brett Kavanaugh.
He sure did.
And
sure did.
If
did a great job.
If the Democrat senators had any shame whatsoever, they would, you know, we'd see a final vote of 75-25 tomorrow. But it's
vote
not.
They vote for their party, Dory. That's all they do. They're voting for their own party. They're not voting for. There was one allegation that was proven, and yet they keep saying that he's an assaulter. And I just find that really.
What else? You said there was one allegation that was proven. What allegation was proven?
No. I said there was no allegation.
Oh, not one. Okay,
none.
Got it. All right, very, very well said, Mike. I appreciate it. Thank you. Let's go to Matt in Seattle. Hey, Matt, you're on Cairo.
Hello. I listened to the entire talk, entire speech, and I have a newfound respect for Susan Collins. I wish that we had a representative like her, and she presented her case very well, you know, and all different aspects.
Wouldn't you Matt, wouldn't you love to see Susan Collins sit down face-to-face with Patty Murray or Maria Cantwell and say, refute anything I just said in that one-hour speech last hour? Because
yeah. Cantwell
and Murray would not be able to refute any of it. They're just, you know, committed to hating Trump and being part of the resistance. And I think that that's shameful when politicians are trying to destroy a man's life because they don't like who nominated him.
Listening to her speech, though, it was a very well-educated, you know, a decision that she made. And unfortunately, the people that are opposed to her and this whole thing, they're of such small mind and miseducation that they won't even listen to a word of it.
I gotcha. All right, Matt, I appreciate you calling in. Thank you, sir. Opens up a line for you, 888-973-CAIRO. Rob is in Bellevue. Hey, Rob, you're on Cairo Radio.
Hey, Dory, thanks for taking my call. I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I think they're all a bunch of posers. But you're right, Susan Collins, I would love to know the backstory of how long it took her to write that speech. That was one of the most historic speeches. I think it's got to be the top 10. I'm up there with some of, you know, John F. Kennedy speeches and so on. She did a remarkable job. I think what happened here was, you know, net, there were some false memories. Maybe there was some booze involved, but I think Kavanaugh deserved to be where he's at. But, you know, I think that he probably would have been served if he would have Googled and listened to the Clarence Thomas hearings and really seen how to behave. I think that foundationally is the disconnect for him, but I'm glad it's going to end up the way it is.
Yeah, I am too. An innocent man. They tried to destroy him. They tried to get him to withdraw. Well said. Thank you, Rob. I appreciate it. Let's go to Tom in Seattle. Hello, Tom. You're on Cairo Radio.
Hey, Dory.
Hello, Tom.
I'm a huge fan, and I appreciate you doing this.
Thank you, sir.
My wife was raped, and one of my daughters, of my four daughters, has been raped. And we all feel that Judge Kavanaugh is getting just raked over the coals. I was accused of something many years ago that I actually did some time for. But it was a false accusation, and sometimes you can't fight these accusations. And he was lucky enough to get up there and fight. And I get offended that these people say, well, he came off aggressively. It's like you be accused of something that will follow you for the rest of your life and see if you're not a little bit aggressive.
Yeah, I never understood that criticism, that he was angry and tearful at being labeled a sex offender when there was no corroborating evidence to support that. I don't know a person alive who wouldn't be tearful and angry at that. And that was one criticism I never got, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad that they compare that to him being a good judge. It's like, if he's on a bench judging someone, he's not being attacked personally. In this situation, he's being attacked personally, and I've texted your show a few times in regards to your stand on defending yourself and your home, and I would take out any person that was attacking me or my family.
No, of course.
And I would do whatever I could to defend me and my family.
Yeah,
and
no, of
it's
course.
It's just a shame.
And when I saw
politicians are doing.
Yeah, it really is. It is shameful. All right, Tom. Hey, it's good to hear from you. Thank you, sir. And you know, when he says it's shame what these politicians are doing, you know who to blame for all of this, right? Democratic Senator Harry Reid, when Barack Obama was president, because these Supreme Court nominations, they used to need 60 votes. You had to find some consensus. You had to have some moderation. But Harry Reid said, well, I'll tell you what, we don't want consensus and moderation. And we Democrats at the time had control of the Senate. So he invoked what was called at the time and still is the nuclear option. You only need a simple majority to seat a Supreme Court justice or other presidential nominees. And the Republicans said, oh, Democrats want to play that game? All right. We got control of the Senate now. We'll just do what Harry Reid's Senate did. Mitch McConnell said, Harry Reid set the precedence. If you are a Democrat, if you're angry at Kavanaugh being on the Supreme Court, you got two people to blame. Harry Reid and Hillary Clinton. That's it. Can't blame Trump. He did what he set out to do. But you can't blame Mitch McConnell. He did what his predecessor Harry Reid did. If you're angry about this, those are the two people you can talk to. Let's go to Jake Monroe. Hey, Jake, you're in Cairo.
Yeah, hi there, Dory. Hey, Susan Collins is an American hero. She made some great points in favor of Kavanaugh. And also, at one point, it sounded like she was really trying to unite us as a country.
I totally agree.
She did a great job, you know, and she did a great job of you know, the arguments of the Democrats and the left, knocking down those arguments. But at the same time, she was extending an olive leaf branch to the Democrats and the left and saying, let's come together on this.
Yeah.
And wow, she made a lot of great points. And in closing, I was only disappointed. I thought there was going to be a standing ovation.
It was a smattering of applause. I know.
Yeah.
I thought the same thing. All right, Jake, thanks. We got less than a minute here. Tony in Auburn. Hey, Tony, you're on Cairo.
Hi. I just want to let you know this entire thing has got me fired up. I'm an independent. I'm not a Republican. But today I've donated to Kevin Cramer, to Marsha Blackburn, to Josh Hawley, to Matt Rosedale.
Okay. I don't think anybody knows who you're talking about. To Democratic candidates, right?
No, these are all Republican candidates that are fighting against Democrats. They're all in Senate campaigns for senators that are voting against.
Right.
Right.
I meant against. You're donating against Democratic candidates.
Correct.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
I'm also volunteering for the Dina Rossi campaign. I've never volunteered for a campaign before, just because this entire smear campaign.
Okay, I got you. Hey, I'm sorry to say I'm out of time here, Tony, but I'm glad you called in. And, yeah, the whole question was who's going to be fired up more before midterms by all this, the right or the left? And that story is yet to be told. Okay, let me take a quick time out here. We'll check the news for you. And then we got to move on. Pete Carroll, the coach of the Seahawks. Lots of off and on field news. The Pete Carroll Show next on the Dory Monson Show.
This is the Pete Carroll Show.
Right, here we go now, here we go now, here we go.
On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM, where the 12s hear the Hawks. The Pete Carroll Show is presented by Les Schwab and Bellevue Rare Coins. Now with Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll, here's Dory Monson.
Well, we got a big one coming up on Sunday afternoon at CenturyLink Field as the Los Angeles Rams, undefeated, come to town against the Seahawks, who, after that 0-2 start, have scrambled right back into it with back-to-back wins. The coach of the Seattle Seahawks, Pete Carroll, joins us. Hey, Coach, good to talk to you.
What's up, Dory? Good to talk to you, too.
Man, this has been an eventful, newsy week, and I wanted to start with, I was on the air Monday afternoon when we got that personal statement from Paul Allen that his non-Hodgkin's lymphoma had returned. And I was thinking, Pete, this is a man who's probably had as much of an impact on this city. And I'm a native. I was born here. He's probably had as much of an impact as any person ever when you look at South Lake Union and the Seattle Seahawks and all of that. And I just wanted to, I've never talked with you about Paul Allen. I wanted to get your thoughts as he was back in the news this week.
Well, I think he is a real hero of the Northwest. You know, he has been fortunate enough to have, you know, so much good fortune in his business, and never ever thought anything other than he's from this area and he's of this area and he wants to do everything he can to contribute to it. And you know, sometimes it doesn't happen like that. He's been a hero in so many ways and really kind of saved the Seahawks and saved, you know, creating the new stadium and all those deals that he's done. And but maybe way more importantly is all the other things that he's done too, representing our area too, you know, around the world, and you know, with the Ebola thing and finding ships that have never been found before,
yeah,
you know,
right,
for historical purposes. I mean, you name it. He's done so many things. Right now, he's making the largest airplane ever. You know, he just continues to do great stuff.
Were you, it was before your USC time, but how aware were you of that whole situation? When, I mean, because the Seahawks were gone to Los Angeles before Paul Allen stepped in. Were you, you know, really aware of that whole situation?
No, not as much as you know, I could have been. I'm sure, you know, we used to play up here in the Kingdom and we knew about what was going on up here. But then when it all switched and all that, not really. I did know some people that were involved in the organization for a while and from down in Northern California. But, you know, just always knew about Paul, you know, knew about his involvement and you know, his ability to control this, you know, this club and all that. So, but not really anything in particular.
Yeah, I mean, because how bizarre is that? I mean, considering what you have helped build here and the relationship with these fans, just the thought that if he hadn't stepped in, the Seattle would not have the Seahawks, and that's almost impossible to even imagine today.
Yeah, yeah, it's been, you know, when we're so fortunate to be representing this area, but it's also been a great relationship, and it's been so much fun, and all of the winning to go along with it, and the fun, and the games, and all that kind of stuff. It's just it's a great situation here. It really is.
Yeah, and as you said earlier this week, and I know that Paul Allen expressed this too, that he's fought this before, and he will bring a lot of fight to this battle again now.
He's a great competitor, and you know, he hasn't taken this with any other thought than he's gonna kick butt, he's gonna win, he's gonna, you know, make this thing turn again. And he has had success in his past, so he's counting on it again, and we're all pulling for him for sure.
Well, it was a big game for you guys last Sunday, and there was a shot of you on the TV broadcast right as you were coming off the sideline at the end of the game, and the look on your face, Pete, was unlike what I usually see. You looked joyful. You looked like, holy crap, what just happened? It was an interesting mix. What was the emotion as you guys pulled out that victory?
Well, it became a really emotional day, you know, and with a couple of our key guys getting injured and knowing that they were hurt, you know, right up front. We knew right off the bat that they were serious injuries. That was tough. And Earl's thing just in general, because we've been working so hard to you know, recreate, you know, this his opportunity here, and we had made such great progress, and I was pulling for him so much, you know, to turn this thing around and finish his career with us and all that kind of stuff, which we're still hopeful for. But the and then the game goes, and it's, you know, we're in a dogfight too, you know, and when we won right in the dramatic fashion with Seabass making the great kick, the team really exploded, and it was it was a big win. It was an emotional win because all that everybody was feeling, you know, yeah. and in the locker room as well, it was hard to celebrate it in normal fashion because we were, you know, so heartfelt in our losses and those two kids. And maybe it was all that. I don't know. You know, yeah. There was a lot going on.
Well, let's break down those two kids. Will Dissly was just one of the pleasant surprises in the first quarter of the season. And just in my conversations with you about him, you just seemed really fond of him as a football player and as a person.
Yeah, that's right. You know, there's reason behind it too, because we were pulling for Will all the way through the draft period, and we really wanted him on our club. And John orchestrated it beautifully to make it happen. He knew the draft well enough to call the shot, and he got him. And then he was everything and more than we thought. Such a bright kid, such a serious competitor, such a good. A good wit about him and everything. He was just a wonderful player on your team, and we can just project that he's going to be a fantastic Seahawk. You know, yeah. So that really became clear early, and then he was coming through and playing great, and then to get such a crazy injury, such an odd situation on the sidelines there. You know, it just didn't have to happen, and unfortunately it did. And to lose him, you know, we'll lose him for the rest of the year. He'll get back. And, you know, he'll be back on track, and we've been through the surgery and this injury before with Jimmy, so we know what it is.
But
it's just a big loss, you know, and just a beautiful kid and beautiful fit for us.
And then later in the game, the one you were just talking about a couple of minutes ago, the Earl Thomas one, that has been such an emotional issue, I know, for the organization and for Earl, and frankly for the fans, too, and it was just, I can understand the explosion of emotions that followed that one.
Yeah, and it's you know, we've just been so close for so long, and he's been so connected to our organization for so long that really when he was, you know, maybe by his own doing, kind of cast himself in a bad light with the club.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to give up on that. I did not want to give in to that fact, like that's what how this was going to turn out, and that it was, you know, we weren't going to be together, we weren't going to connect the dots and get back to playing together, and he made it back, and we made it through the times, and we really had turned the corner, and we were ready to move forward and really make a big run of this year that he had started so beautifully, and then to get it snatched away like that was just really broke my heart for him, because it was about Earl realizing his dreams. He wants to be the greatest that ever played, and he's willing to do whatever it takes to do that, and the fact that he wanted to be recognized as that, I don't blame him. That's how he sees it, you know. And so we just haven't been able to put it together yet, you know, as far as the business stuff, but the rest of it was coming together, and man, he was off to a great start, you know. So I don't know. We could talk about it forever, because he's just been such a great player and performer and a champion and competitor in this team. So it's really, we owe him a lot, is all he's contributed.
And then, you know, what was so unfortunate, the gesture he made as he was being carted off the field. And I heard you talk on Monday about, you know, you wanted people to extend grace in his direction. And I know how a lot of people, and probably myself included, interpreted that. And we weren't really feeling a lot of grace when we saw that gesture. But you seem to really be able to take the player's perspective in emotional things like that.
Well, yeah, you know, I don't think that I truly wanted everybody to treat him in such a way. I just wanted him, I was just hoping that people would understand that there's a lot to it. There's a lot going on. This was an extraordinarily emotional and difficult moment in a young man's life, you know, in his career. And,
sure.
And so if he says something out of line, or he doesn't, you know, maybe you give him a little slack in that regard and give him a chance to get right. Remember last time Earl got hurt, he retired, in a sense, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just understand the depth of this, and I wanted to just give him care, you know, and feel for him at the time. I don't, you know, like I said, it was a big stadium. Yeah, I'm not sure who that gesture was for.
Right.
A lot of people there, you know, and everybody automatically put it where they did, and I don't know where, I don't know to this at this moment where it went, but anyway, that's just what I felt about him, and we've been through a lot, and I'm still pulling for him.
I hope you know I'm very fond of you, and I feel defensive about you You know, because I've gotten to know you a little bit over the years. And, you know, what I've heard, what I've gotten to know is you are so good about being supportive of your players, you know, whether it's on social issues or the heat of the moment thing like that on Sunday. Do you ever feel like when anonymous comments are made in Sports Illustrated or a gesture is made, do you ever feel like, man, it's not being reciprocated, the, you know, the energy and the love that you put into your players?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned it that way, because this really comes from a place of love. And if it didn't, it wouldn't turn out like it is, or, you know, the point of reference wouldn't be where it is. Because we care that much about these guys. Not really, Dory. What other people say and what other people do, that's what they do, you know. And I would like to help them hear our side of it sometimes and express, you know, what's important to us. But I don't feel like I've got to get back at them. I don't feel like I got to defend, you know. I think I'm doing this exactly the way that it's right in my heart to do it. And I'm okay about that. If somebody doesn't agree, I don't care, you know. I wish people would understand how to give the love to young people and people that are fighting for what they believe in and care so much. And even though you don't agree, you know, and I don't know if that's empathy or what, you know, I've tried to express that before, that there's an opportunity to really show that you really care for what the person is, who they are, where they come from, what they're all about, whether you agree with them or whether they agree with you or whatever, you know. I love the individuals and the uniqueness and the special ways about people, I don't know how else to do it.
Yeah, I get that. All right, hey, Pete, hold on. Coach of the Seattle Seahawks, Pete Carroll, he's going to spend the rest of the half hour with us. They had some other big off-the-field news, and we have a big game coming up against the Los Angeles Rams that we will preview. All of that straight ahead as the Pete Carroll Show continues here on the Dory Monson. Is with us. Seahawks have a big game coming up against the Rams on Sunday, and we'll get to that in just a moment. Man, this has been such a newsy week. Then you get the news of the indefinite suspension of Michael Kendricks, and you and I talked about him, I think, just last week, and this is really an unprecedented situation. I don't minimize in any way white-collar crime. It's serious. I understand why they prosecuted, but it struck me, you know, this guy's facing 3 years in prison, awaiting sentencing. The NFL has suspended him indefinitely. That's a steep price to pay. And he did something wrong, and he acknowledges it, and he paid the restitution and all of that. But what a price to pay when you're that age and you only have a short window to play in the NFL.
Yeah, I really agree. You know, I agree with that. And now that I've gotten to know Michael the kind of person he is and how he, you know, how he feels about fitting into the world and all that, it's tough. This is a tough situation for him. And the indefinite suspension, sometimes that's harder than anything. You know what you know, and you can deal with it. But the fact that it's an indefinite suspension, that doesn't help us at all. It yeah. doesn't help him kind of get his sights set on what's going on. And I think probably the league's trying to take a look and see what, you know, what the reaction is to it, trying to figure it out, because it is a unique situation for them also. It's not anywhere near some of the violent issues that have come up, or, you know, other people that have been involved with some really long-term suspensions and stuff. But he broke the law, and he has to pay his price and all that kind of stuff. I understand that, I guess. But anyway, it's just difficult, and feel for him, you know. He made a mistake, and people make mistakes, and you got to pay the price sometimes. Unfortunately, that's what this is turning out to be.
And meanwhile, amidst all of this maelstrom, you got a pretty big game to get ready for on Sunday.
It doesn't feel like that. I know that we're so used to the chaos that we kind of thrive in it a little bit. But this is a huge opportunity. It's a great championship matchup. It's a team in the division as well as a team that's on fire right now. We're going to do everything we can to put together a plan that gives us a chance, and we're going for it. You know, we're not holding back. And if we play anybody here, we feel like we're going to have a great chance to win, and we're going to go for it in that fashion.
Tell me about Jared Goff, because there have been a lot of young quarterbacks who excel as rookies, even as second-year players, and then the league starts to catch up to them. And then you have guys like Jared Goff, who they just keep flying up the mountain, and that's, it's not unique. I think your quarterback did the same thing. But it's pretty special when you see somebody like that.
Yeah, he's off to a great start, you know, and the team is fitted together beautifully, and they're healthy, you know, they're keeping their elements of the offense all together. The system is allowing him to find the time to be standing back there pretty clean. He's only been sacked 5 times, you know, in 4 games, and what he has been able to do with that opportunity is be extraordinarily accurate. He is just throwing the ball just lights out, and whether it's play passes or drop back stuff on the move, he's been able to find guys and really deliver the ball in very tight situations, as well as some of the other things that they've had. But he's been very impressive in that regard, much, much more so than he was in his first year and even in his year last year. So, again, he's off to a good start. It's a long season, though. You know, he's got a long ways to go. This is just the first quarter, and it's hard to win a game in the first quarter.
And that guy behind him, Todd Gurley's pretty good, too, isn't he?
Oh, man, what a player. Yeah, he's an exceptional player. Physical, tough, really fast. Very creative and such a well-rounded player. He's a terrific blocker. He's a great catcher. And of course he's got everything you want in the running back. So he's a perfect, support system back there. And the offense is built around him, and Goff is just killing it using all the good elements they have.
Yeah, they're very special. All right. How are we looking on the injury front? You already said KJ Wright's not going to make it back this week, correct?
Yeah, KJ's not making it. But otherwise we'll get a couple guys back. Chris Carson will come back. He looks great in practice. Deion Jordan will be back with us too. Unfortunately, Frank's been sick. Frank Clark got a food poisoning thing, so he's been sick a little bit this week, and we're trying to get him back and get him back ready to play, which we think he can. But other than that, we're practicing fast and hard. We had a great week, and we're really looking forward to it.
Well, you told me when you guys were sitting at 0-2 a couple of weeks ago, you said on this show, the story of your season is going to be written by how you play at home.
That's it. It will be. And so this is, you know, when we jumped out last week and a big win over Dallas, and now it's a great opportunity against the Rams. Really, we're not taking anything, but we're going to put together a game plan that's going to give us a chance to really represent like we want to there at CenturyLink.
All right. Well, it's going to be exciting. And next time you and I talk, we're going to be sitting down together in London, I believe.
Well, that sounds great. That sounds great.
All right. Well, have
tea
a great
and crumpets or something like that, huh?
Yeah, you bring the tea, I'll bring the crumpets. That's a deal.
I have no idea what a crumpet is. I have no idea.
I think it's what you do with a piece of paper when you're done with it. You crumpet
it. Okay, I got you.
Crumpet it and throw it away. Okay, Pete, have a great game on Sunday, and I'll see you in London.
Thank you, Dory. Good to talk to you.
All right, Pete Carroll joining us. And as always, love your thoughts on the Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. And we have lots more to come. Here is the Dory Monson Show. Rolls on.